Welcome to ViralCast, MovieViral.com's official podcast. I'm Dan, the executive editor for the site, and I'm here with two very special guests, Kelsey and Rose, who helped us cover 2009 Comic-Con. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Sure.
That's right, we're special.
I thought you were going to say thanks for covering Comic-Con 3 years ago.
I do appreciate that as well, obviously.
That was actually... Oh, no, not 4 years ago. That's right. That's three. Wow. I are smart. I can do math.
These are not our math consultants. So that's important to know.
Yeah. Was it really in 09? I thought it was in 08.
No, we weren't even in existence in 08.
Oh, well, then it wasn't in 08 then.
It was 09, the same year that friendship happened.
Oh, yeah.
Then that my shit got stolen. I was going to actually
try. Family show. Rose, what did we just say about swearing, huh?
Sorry, it's family friendly.
Sure.
I want to cuss, but I can't. Actually, I was going to open up by calling myself Rose. I don't know why they thought I was rich, but those mother effers stole my turkey sandwich, Mesa.
Oh, wow. Bringing that back.
Throwback. Huh? Throwback.
Pretty good. You need to let that go.
I have never completely recovered from having that turkey sandwich stolen from me, by the way. So if the perpetrators who stole and ate my amazing turkey sandwich are listening, F all of you, and I hope that you die in a burning building while eating a turkey sandwich. I don't know.
But have you seen the prices? Have you seen the prices of food there at Comic-Con? There's no wonder someone stole it from you.
Yeah, right?
Rose is bringing the happiness and the friendliness and the good spirits to your podcast, Dan. Are you excited about this? Yes. I know I am.
Do you guys feel the love?
Great way to start. You're going to start everything. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, we'll start off talking about the box office this weekend. The two big movies that came out that did, I guess you could say, pretty well were Resident Evil 24, whatever number that is.
I was going to ask. Is this like 15?
It feels like it. And then Finding Nemo 3D. So did you guys see either of those movies this weekend?
Nope.
Exactly.
forget. Actually, I want to go see Finding Nemo, but I just haven't had a chance.
Yeah, I saw it in 3D over the during the week, and it was good. I mean, for me, I've never been a big 3D person. It's kind of pointless. I mean, maybe Avatar is the only exception to the rule. But otherwise, I've never been a huge fan. Even here, it doesn't really make a big difference. There's a few scenes here and there where like, oh, that's kind of cool. But mostly, I got to see Finding Nemo again, so that was fun.
Spoiler alert, they find Nemo.
What?
How dare you?
how dare you spoil a 9-year-old movie?
A movie that's been out for 9 years.
Dan, you saw it in 3D. Does it like make a difference? I mean, is it something that people should go do? Does it not really matter? Like, what do you
think? I'd say people should go see it. I think they're only releasing it in 3D, so because the Toy Story short before it is really funny, and it's also just a great movie to see on the big screen again, I think that alone makes it worth going to see, especially because now it's been like 9 years, so there's a lot of kids now that weren't alive back then that I think would really appreciate it.
I can't believe it's been 9 years since that movie came out.
That's crazy.
I know.
So I think just for that reason alone, it's worth seeing. It's a great movie. I love the movie. It's probably one of the best Pixar movies that they've had other than the Toy Stories.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to go see it, just because I loved it so much when I saw it, and I thought it'd be fun to like actually see it in the big screen again. But
yeah, and I mean, and I'm sure, you know, it'd be the releasing on Blu-ray and whatever. So, but it's, yeah, I know it's a fun one to watch. And like I said, the 3D, there's a few things here and there where it's kind of cool. There's some good depth in the water when things kind of come at you. Like you almost don't realize like this was made already before 3D, yet there's some of the moves that the fish make and stuff are actually really perfect for 3D. So there's a few things like that, but most of the time it's just kind of, at least you get to see the movie. I don't know about the Resident Evil movie though. I stopped watching after the first one. So, but it keeps making money, especially overseas. So that's why they keep making them.
It's really popular in Japan.
I don't know.
So it's big in Japan, you'd say.
Oh. Oh my god! I'm so sorry. I don't know if you guys can hear that. My cats are like trying to have like WWE in my living room right now. Like, full on wrestling with each other.
Last time I did a podcast, I had one of our guys, his dog kept barking every once in a while, and I had to edit. I tried to edit out the barks, and it worked like half the time. But sometimes you just couldn't. But it's really funny. Again. So you never know.
He's barking in this one, it's Kelsey, so she has an issue with that sometimes.
Well, you know, can't help it. Sorry,
she just randomly barks. I don't know. It's, you know, just kind of. I love you, anyways, Kelsey.
Thanks.
This is already getting out of control. I don't know if I like this.
Okay. You expected less with us on here with you?
I don't know why I expected anything else. I apologize. we'll move on to one of our features, The Buzz. If you guys read our site, then you might know that we have a few weekly features and a monthly feature. One of them is called The Buzz, which is the top most talked about stories of the week. So we'll kind of go through them because since they were talked about, they're worth talking about again. So one of the big things is James Cameron had a few interviews this week because Titanic came out on 3D Blu-ray after its earlier release this year in 3D. So it seems like almost any time that James Cameron says anything, people kind of want to talk about it. Yeah. And considering he's made the two biggest grossing movies of all time, that's not very surprising. So one of the big things he talked about was the third biggest movie of all time, The Avengers, saying that he really liked it, and he kind of made some jokes about it not being able to, reach how the $2 billion club.
did he really?
He's making jokes about it. But one of the things he said later is that, look, he's happy that they did so well, and if they keep doing well, that's great. And Joss Whedon said that earlier, too, about, like, Dark Knight and stuff like that, where everyone just wants all the movies to do well. You know, sure, you want yours maybe to do a little better just for competitive reasons, but everyone wants all the movies to do well because that helps everyone. I'm assuming that they're being genuine. but that was kind of nice to hear him say. He talked about a few other movies like Prometheus, gave it a pretty good review. And he also talked about the Jurassic Park, saying that he almost bought the rights to it. He was trying to buy the rights to it, but Spielberg beat him out by a couple of hours. What do you guys think about a James Cameron directed Jurassic Park?
That would be cool.
Yeah, actually.
He would just blow the crap out of that environment, you know, and just make it really, you know, interesting and lush. And it would be cool because the original was made not so long ago, but I mean,
it's been almost 18
years. Yeah, before, you know, the advanced CGI and advanced things that James Cameron seems to like to use in his films that I think he could really bring that to life.
When did it come out in comparison to Titanic?
It was 3 years before because I think it was 94 was when Jurassic Park came out, and then Titanic was 97.
I mean, you know, one great thing I think about Titanic, I mean, all girls freaking love that movie. I don't know what it is about Titanic. It goes on TV and we all just sit down and shut up and we're like, oh my God, no, Jack, don't. But, that movie, the special effects on that movie, I mean, I've watched it on TV numerous times, like I said, today, or, you know, even just
numerous times
back
today
in the
you've
day.
Seen it?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say that I haven't watched it seven times today. But the effects were really, really before their time, I think.
Yeah.
I just feel like even watching it today, they're still almost just as good as watching a movie that was done today. I know that they made some huge steps in technology and special effects and making the movie look good. I mean, even look at Avatar. Avatar was amazing. I mean, for me, seeing it on screen, in 3D and a huge screen, it was like nothing I've ever seen before. So I think that would be interesting, like Kelsey said, to see the Jurassic Park world. Not that I didn't think Spielberg did an amazing job, but I mean, you watch it now and, you know, you can see the disconnect of the dinosaurs look a little cheesier than maybe when you first saw the movie. And I don't know. So it would be interesting to have seen that, but
yeah, I think it would have been really, really interesting because you're kind of mentioning that Cameron always kind of pushes the boundaries.
Yeah, totally.
And just to correct myself, by the way, it was 93 when Jurassic Park came out, so there's a 4-year gap. But I like to be accurate. And so, but still, I mean, that's a pretty good – both of those movies, I think, really pushed some boundaries in terms of technology. I mean, I personally see Jurassic Park, and it's still really impressive, especially when you consider it was made 19 years ago and how good those are. I mean, I watched the show Terra Nova last year, which got canceled, unfortunately. But the dinosaurs – didn't look much better than that, if not the same.
Oh, really?
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 19 years, and they threw in a lot of money into that show. And it's still, they still looked about the same, if not almost worse sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's kind of interesting to see how much he was able to push it. And so to maybe compare that to James Cameron, how he would have pushed it would have been in a different way. But it would have been really, really cool to see that. Because, I mean, you look at not only Avatar and Titanic, which people think about, but look at Terminator 2. you know, with the whole liquid guy effect and all that stuff. I mean, that stuff was really kind of ahead of its time.
Yeah.
So
I had nightmares about that dude.
Really?
Oh yeah, that guy scared me.
Yeah, and it's
I mean, liquid hand and shit.
You can turn anything. Yeah. So I mean, he's really done. It would definitely be a different movie. And he mentioned in that same comment that he made that he's kind of glad that once he saw the movie, he was glad that Spielberg took it because he's like, you know, that's kind of how it needed to be. I mean, he could have done his own thing, but I think that, you know, the way Spielberg had done it was the right way. And
the
quote that I saw was when I saw the film, I realized that I was not the right person to make the film. He was because he made a dinosaur movie for kids and mine would have been aliens with dinosaurs and that wouldn't have been fair.
His sensibility
was right for the film. I'd have gone further, nastier, much nastier.
See, so that would be cool. I mean, like I said, it'd been different, but definitely would have been a different movie, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but considering the amount of money it made, it's probably for the best.
It sounds a little undercutty, though, don't you think? I don't know. I guess who knows?
Like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
Made and I would have done a better job.
That's what it should have been, right? You
he's
know,
a snob, like, so whatever.
It just sounded kind of undercutty to me. I don't know. That's how I took it.
No, I agree. I mean, have you ever guys read his script for Spider-Man?
He did a script for Spider-Man?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they have. I don't know if I've seen the actual full thing. I think I've only saw snippets of it. But it was before Sam Raimi took control of it, and it was really weird. And I forget a lot of the specifics, but there was just some things that just did not make sense, and it was really weird. So I mean, he definitely likes to kind of push things away from where you would think they would go, because I think Jurassic Park was the kind of movie you expect for a movie called Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very very good, and everyone loves it, and it's a great movie, but it's pretty much what you expect, which is actually kind of a good thing. So I think he would have taken it in a way where you wouldn't have thought it to go.
Yeah.
I wouldn't ever see anything by James Cameron who's adapted something. Like, I think he should stick to his original, like, him developing the stuff. And then, I mean, like, Titanic is, like, adapted from an event, but he was able to create the whole story, you know?
Yeah, so Terminator
created
original.
The whole story, the environment, Terminator, you know? I wouldn't want to see him adapt anything, because I would feel like, if it's something, like, let's say Spider-Man, if I'm a fan of Spider-Man, I already have in my head what I want it to look like, right. Or, like, what I think it should take from the original material, and I feel like someone like James Cameron would take it and just be like, let's make it 1,000 times bigger and blow stuff up and aliens, you know?
Well, I think that's kind of what he was saying almost to a certain degree. It's like, you know, people wanted something out of that movie, and he wouldn't have provided that for him. He would have done something different.
Yeah.
And so I think whether it's still considered snobby and undercutting, which I still kind of believe it was, I think he was right that, you know, with certain material, people expect something. And I don't think that would have been right. I mean, he did well in Aliens 2.
I feel like he takes a certain amount of time to make movies.
Yeah, definitely.
And, like, if he had done Jurassic Park, I don't think Titanic would have ever happened.
Yeah. It would have taken, like, 10 years to make it.
Yeah. Right?
But he did Aliens 2, which, granted, in its own way, actually, was also different. I mean, the first Alien was very much a horror film in space. It was very closed and space and everything, and Aliens 2 became like this big action movie. So he always seems to kind of find a way to, even when he is adapting something or doing his own thing, to make it different. He always finds a way to make it different.
I actually met James Cameron's personal assistant, like,
name dropping,
like,
here,
5 or 6 years ago.
That's cool.
Yeah, I went to dinner with her.
It's what you said on the last podcast we did, right?
I did, didn't I?
Just to remind everyone.
James Cameron assistant. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you want to hear that story, you could go back to 2009.
I'll link it.
And find out more about
I met Joss Whedon. So
Cameron's assistant.
I actually got to meet Joss Whedon himself.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I was at the, what's it called? That's when they start, when they talk to people. The press conference.
When they talk to people.
You know that guy.
There's like a bunch of people in a room, and there's like one guy at the front. Yeah. And
so they had a press conference with the most of the cast and him and some of the executives and stuff. And right afterwards, some of them were going upstairs into the hotel to do what is one-on-one interviews, and then some people were just leaving. And so he was just standing in the lobby, just kind of waiting around for something. And so, of course, I had to go up to him and told him how much I liked the movie and everything. So, and all of his work, I'm a big fan of Whedon. So it was kind of cool. I mean, I think it was a little weirded out to have people like come up to him, but but he was nice,
like,
about it.
Please don't touch me.
Yeah, exactly. He just seemed pretty nice about it. Yeah, I was, and so there were some other things that James Cameron talked about this week, kind of going along with one of my favorite story, which wasn't one of the bigger ones that he mentioned, but I really liked it, was him talking about the meme that's around about everyone saying that both Jack and Rose could have fit on that piece of driftwood.
Yeah.
And there's pictures online and everything, the outline that people have done, and they sit on, and how it's a pretty big piece of wood where they could, you know, it's a door or something, and they could have easily fit on it. But he talked about it saying that it's actually not about the space, it's about the buoyancy. That they even try, you see in the movie, they actually try to get on there, and it flips over, and then what happens is if they were both going on it, either it would sink. If they could balance it in some way, it would sink a little bit. And then they'd both be in the water, and then they'd have hypothermia. Same thing if they switch sides and stuff. So it was kind of interesting that he talked about it, and he said that Mythbusters are actually going to try to tackle it, which is really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
I want to see that.
Yeah, because they do a really good job tackling this kind of thing. So it's kind of cool, because a lot of people talked about it, and so finally he had a chance to mention it. Because I don't remember if you know, I think it was... A couple years ago, Neil deGrasse Tyson mentioned that, you know, he's a really popular astrophysicist, and he mentioned that the stars in Titanic are inaccurate. The night sky is wrong.
Yeah, that was the one thing he changed when it came out.
Exactly.
Theaters again.
Because that was the one thing that, you know, Tyson was mentioning, is that Cameron is such a detail-oriented guy that for him to mess this up, it's like, of course he had to mention it. And then they called him up, I think, when they were redoing the movie for the re-release and the Blu-ray. And so he explained to him how to do the sky and everything. So that's really cool that he's, you know, he's very detail-oriented. So that's why when people kind of say, oh, they could have both fit on there, you think, man, he would have thought of that, definitely, because he's so detail-oriented. And so he had a really great explanation for that.
Yeah.
There was some special on one of those cable channels, Discovery or History, I don't know what it was, around the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic that was his special, and it was like 2 hours long, and it was all about when the Titanic sank and like where everything landed and how they used that to try and figure out exactly what happened and what sank first and where it landed. And it was like they used really high-tech animations and stuff, and it was fascinating. And my roommate and I just sat there like enwrapped, like watching it for 2 hours, like, whoa, this is so cool.
Because he actually
presented so well, and just really, he's just really, really smart about that kind of stuff, and so detailed oriented. And you know, there's like 85,000 maps that he's made, and
he's obsessed over the whole thing.
I heard that he got like footage that no one had ever seen like beforehand. Because they did a bunch of underwater camera work with like special submarines and stuff, and they were like images that no one had ever captured before. So they actually kind of made history on there, I guess. Or yeah, so it's kind of cool. Have you guys been to the Titanic Museum thing?
No, I never have. I've always wanted to. Is there one in Vegas, or is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, one in Vegas last year, and they recreate the boat, so you feel like you're in the movie. I mean, I know it's dumb because it's like you feel like you're really on the Titanic. It's pretty awesome. Like they even have the stairwell, and it was funny because you know my name's Rose, so I was like, oh my god, Jack's gonna come down the stairs at any minute, whisk me away.
Don't you get a card like the Museum of Tolerance? You get like a card and you get to figure out if you live or die at the end.
Yeah, you get a card at the beginning and they give you a name and they say what class you were and kind of a backstory of why you were on the Titanic.
That's cool.
And I lived and Betty died, so sorry, Betty.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Betty.
That's cool. Yeah, where's it again?
Vegas.
Oh, of course.
Vegas in the Luxor, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely recommend it. It's really awesome.
That's cool.
I think it does some traveling things too. Maybe if I'm remembering correctly, like pieces of it somewhere else.
Yeah, the one in Vegas has the biggest piece of the boat there too.
Wow.
And they even have this whole section where you go in, and it's like how cold it would have been that night.
Oh my god!
It's like a freezer. It's crazy. So you go in there, and you feel like you're on the end of the boat, and they like have like ice there that you can touch. It's awesome. It's really cool.
Well, the big thing that Cameron talked about this week that got people talking was the sequels to Avatar. For one thing, he mentioned that Avatar 4, which they're not doing yet, is going to be a prequel, and that they're about to do 2 and 3 right now at the same time.
I love that they're already planning on 4 movies.
Yeah. He has this whole Bible thing for it, where it's like this whole huge mythology already built out for it. So it's not too surprising. I know that you have to kind of do it at the same time to save money, I think. So they're doing 2 and 3, and he actually mentioned that they won't fall into the same traps as the Matrix sequels, because that was a really interesting comment that got people talking about it. Because, yeah, I know a lot of people are not happy with the way the Matrix sequels happened. And he said, I think the particular thing that he mentions about it is that there's definitely an ending, because there's sort of a feeling that there's not a real good ending to the trilogy. And so he
says, the Matrix?
Yeah. Oh, so he's saying that, you know, there's got to be some sort of sense of conclusion. But also that the journey will continue. So that kind of concept. So that's one of the things that I think a lot of people don't like about the Matrix. There's a lot of things I don't like about the Matrix sequels, but
they were kind of weird. I liked the first one, and then I don't know. It was
downhill from there, pretty much.
Yeah, it wasn't hard to follow. Yeah. It just I don't know.
Got confusing. I mean, because the first one was so great, it had a really. It's one of those things where when you're in that world and you only see that much of it, it's great because you can imagine more.
Yeah.
And so now the problem is that they really actually explore more, and it's not as interesting because you don't have as much left to your imagination. And also just kind of ended silly with them having this sort of like standstill. So there's a few issues there. Now, the one thing I do like is in the second one, that huge car sequence in the freeway. It's just incredible. But other than that.
With those like Rastafarian
twin things.
Yeah, exactly. So that whole sequence is pretty amazing.
Albino Rastafarian ghosts or something.
Yeah, they're kind of weird.
That's their official name in the movie.
That is, that is.
Albino Rastafarian ghost number one.
And two.
Yeah. We said the same thing at the same time.
Kelsey, I think we're soulmates.
Twinsies.
All right,
Twinsies, BFFs.
Yeah.
I mean, so what do you guys think about the idea of them doing so many sequels? I mean, like I said, probably he already has the ideas. And we know that the fourth one will be a prequel, but I mean the fact they're thinking this far ahead. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I think
Yeah.
Oh. Go ahead, Kelsey.
I was just gonna say. I mean, I think it's. I don't know because it sounds like he has this huge thing already worked out, so that's good. There's not the ability to kind of mess it up as you go along. You know what I mean?
Right.
If he had just the one written, and then he was like, "I want to make Avatar 2. I'll write it," and then they write it and make it. And he's like, I want to make Avatar 3. I'll write it. But it sounds like he already has everything all worked out. So maybe that would be a good, you know, a plus to it. Whereas I think maybe, I don't even know how the Matrix films are written, if that was the case or not. But it seems like sequels tend to kind of screw up when you don't go into it knowing you want to have multiple movies. You know what I mean? Like you make a movie and then you're like, we should make a part two. And then you write it and then it sucks, you know?
Yeah, I think that happens a lot of the times with movies. I mean, they write a story and people love it and the movie's huge. And they're like, oh, well, let's milk this cow some more. And, you know, they make another one and it's just like disappointing. I hate when there's a second movie and it just, you know, it sucks. And it's like, you ruin the story for me. Like, the first one was good enough. So I am always iffy about sequels and prequels and stuff like that just because sometimes it does fall into that Matrix thing. A lot of movies, just the second one is just disappointing because the first one was so groundbreaking. Yeah. The first one had such a great story. It tied everything together. And so when they try and come back to that and like add more to it, it does, sometimes it doesn't work. But I wonder if he had that in his head before he finished the first one. That's kind of what I'm wondering.
What I know, yeah. He mentioned did, that.
Then I think they're going to be amazing. But if he didn't, I don't know. We'll see.
And he mentioned something to the effect of that he had the overall story really kind of mapped out in detail. As they call it sometimes, the story Bible, kind of this idea that you have the bigger scheme kind of really planned out. So whether he had the movies particularly planned out in that way, I don't know. But the overall story is there. I mean, he created it, whether they're good or not, but I don't know. But he definitely has the stories there. So that's cool. I mean, the fact that he already knows that the fourth one's a prequel, you can tell that he's planned this out a little bit.
Like the Matrix, they could have just released the first one, and that would have been good enough. You know,
it's
like
about the money. It's all about the money.
It ended well. I mean, it ended on kind of a final note-ish. It's been a really long time since I've seen that.
That was like
so
super
weird
at the end. Just
but,
away.
You know, it had a kind of a finality kind of feel to it. And I think that they could have. I remember hearing about it and being like, what are they going to talk about? Like,
well, I think like also with that is you're leaving. I'm a big like fan of leaving stuff open to like an audience to kind of like think about and fill in later on. And when you make a sequel or a prequel or whatever, you're basically taking that like that option away from the audience. Like you're just saying like, oh yeah, you thought this was going to happen. Nope. This is, or in your head you had it worked out. Like this is how, what led to it. No, this is what led to it. Yeah. So in a way, like, sometimes it is a better story when the person thinks like, oh, I wonder what happened afterwards. This is what I think would have happened afterwards. And, you know, and their imagination is, you know, 20 times better than what movie, you know, whatever movie they make. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's the big issue, and is that, you know, the story over the money. You know, when there's a sequel, a lot of times it's for the money, but sometimes it's for the story. Sometimes both work out very nicely. But a lot of times, you know, they want to push that money. I mean, Matrix is a great example because they did make that one movie, didn't plan to make more, and then they wanted, you know, they realized how much money it was making, how popular it was, and so they made more. You know, next
that's the problem. It is a big, like, you know, struggle with film. I think there's this big disconnect with big money makers or an actually good movie. And unfortunately, to me, most movies that are actually worth, you know, seeing and reviewing and loving are movies that don't necessarily make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So
the so Highlander is a great example, because like I said, early in the movie, Sean Connery's character dies, and at the end, the Highlander becomes mortal, and yet they still made a sequel where both of them are in it, and they both become the main guy goes back to being immortal, and then Sean Connery just sort of comes back to life, and there's a bunch of weird things in the movie that don't make any sense. It's considered one of the worst movies of all time, and you could tell it's just because the first one, which didn't make a whole lot of money, but had a huge cult following right after, they realized, oh, we can really monetize this, and so then they made the sequel, and it was terrible, and it still made no money. So
let's bring somebody back to life.
Yeah, and the movie made no sense. There's a lot more worse things than that, but one of the things that just is a perfect example of them just literally just doing a money grab was that they brought back one character back to life, and the other one they changed it so that instead of being mortal now, he went back to being immortal. It was like, it was just really weird. And there's a lot of weird things in that movie. But
speaking of bringing people back to life, I actually think, didn't they do that in this newest Resident Evil? Like, didn't one of the characters who died
show her husband or something
in the movie again?
The movies don't make any sense, so I have no idea.
Yeah, but still, it's like,
I've long given up on them, right?
We're talking about a movie that already has to do with the undead, so whatever.
Yeah.
I figured they can find a way to do that for somebody. I don't know. I'll admit, though, that one of the trailers they had for it was really good. It was the main girl. I guess they had pretended like she was in this other life where it was like nice and sweet, like suburban area. And
I saw that trailer.
With the husband and the daughter. And then like everything seems really nice. And then all of a sudden the zombies come rushing in. Like, that was awesome. But then everything else sucked. So, but that part was really awesome. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then
Watch the trailer, and that's all you need.
Yeah, exactly. And then I saw some footage at Comic-Con, and it wasn't that impressive. So, but anyway, so we'll move on from that since we've talked a lot about Cameron and other things. So the other big story of the week was for Pacific Rim, which, for people who don't know, it's Guillermo del Toro is directing that, and it's about basically just giant robots fighting giant monsters. And
there's a new idea.
I know, exactly. And it actually looks really good. I mean, anybody else, I would just be like, oh, it's another one of these. But, you know, it's Guillermo del Toro. He has a very unique vision.
I love him, too.
So he, you know, they showed some footage at Comic-Con. It looked great. And he specifically said he didn't want to make it in 3D because the way that the scope of the sizes of them and everything, it just wouldn't work very well. And so it was kind of pointless. But then now this week comes out that Warner Brothers is basically forcing him to convert it into 3D, which has gotten a lot of people mad. It just proves once again that 3D is not really meant to be added creative concept. It's more of just a moneymaker because 3D movies do really well overseas. So, I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Terrible.
Well, yeah, it goes back to the whole, like, you know, making a good movie over making money. And it's unfortunate that Warner Brothers feels like, to me, it says that they don't think it's a good enough movie on its own. You know, it's like kind of a slap in the face to him. As a director, like, that's something he did on purpose. And on top of it, movies that are converted to 3D afterwards always look crappy, in my opinion. Like, if it's made, like, if they film it in 3D, then I think that, unless it's animated, because that's easier to, you know, convert that into 3D, obviously. But just movies that are filmed and not filmed in 3D, I just don't think it really works. It's just a gimmick, you know?
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's examples of where you can actually convert it and it looks pretty decent. I mean, they have to spend a lot of time and money to do it.
Yeah.
They're saying that your average movie that converts, there's different estimates depending on different things you read, but the estimates are it takes about $50,000 to $100,000 per minute to convert a movie. Now, that's so not crazy.
Really, what money are they going to make then? Like, why... They're spending overseas. All this money to make more money, but
yeah. But if you think about it, like even if you go by the higher estimates and it's a 2-hour movie, I mean, you're looking at you're only going to spend I think like $10-15 million somewhere in that range. So if that you know that could the 3D could potentially add on that much in the domestic cost alone, domestic retail alone, where and overseas it could make you know the same amount as well. So you know you could be doubling your profits there and just on based on that, but. It's really hard to gauge it sometimes, especially in terms of, you know, why are people seeing the 3D and is it because of the 3D that they're seeing it and all that other stuff. So it's a little hard to compare it, but it's really, I mean, it does make money, you know, but the thing is, like you said, unless you're really spending a lot of time, because I think it might've been Cameron actually who mentioned it too, that if you really spend the time and energy to really convert a movie, well, it can look pretty good. It will never look as good as something that's made in 3D, like filmed in 3D, but you can make it look pretty good, but you got to spend a lot of time and money to do it. Well, and so it might go beyond the mention that we just said, that 10 to 15, it might break into the 20 to 30 million. And then at that point, the question is it worth it?
I think too that some movies creatively, they want it to be in 3D. I mean, I saw Hugo
in
the end of last year, and that movie worked so well in 3D. It was made to be a 3D movie.
Right.
It just, I understand why they made that movie in 3D, and I don't know. It should be a creative decision, whether or not something that the big you know company decides on over the director, you know, forcing.
Yeah, I guess if you're gonna put a movie in 3D, then Pacific Rim is a good choice. You know, giant robots fighting off aliens, I guess, would be
in
3D. But
I mean, he said
I don't know, I agree. For a director to explicitly be like, I don't really want to show this in 3D, and then they're like, nope, too bad, you are.
I wonder though if they'll actually make more money because people will go to see it in 3D and not in 3D to see if it actually made, like, if it actually was a smart or wrong decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think people... To a certain degree, if a movie comes out in 3D, they'll see it in 3D. There's definitely those people. So that alone is going to make you more money.
Especially one like Pacific Rim.
Well, now I actually kind of want to see it in 2D and 3D and see if he was right and like that, you know, there was a really good reason for them not to do it in 3D.
And they're going
to
get your money twice now, so that's good. So
plus, if it makes a lot of money in 3D overseas, I mean, we don't really know what that's like. You know what I mean? Like, if it's... I mean, if it's so popular overseas and it's popular enough to where they think that they should make it in 3D for just not just for overseas, but for the purpose of making a lot of money overseas, you know, I mean, we have other options here. Like, I don't know. I think that maybe is part of the thing too, where they, you know, we don't really know. Being here in the U.S., like we have that opinion of, well, we like 2D more or we like 3D more or whatever, but. You know, maybe overseas, those big, you know, action movies are better in 3D all the time, no matter what kind of action movie it is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a preference kind of thing. So that's why
they
make that business decision more than anything.
Yeah.
No matter what the reason is.
It's too bad.
Yeah. So, if anybody's listening wants to learn more about Del Toro mentioning 3D and why he doesn't want to do it, the Buzz article actually has a link to that on Collider where he's talking about it. Gives some really good details in terms of why he didn't really want to do it that way.
I listened to that interview on your website, which is from Collider, and when he was talking about shooting with the Red Epic and the camera and how it just looked beautiful, and I looked up some test footage from the Red Epic, and It's just so pretty.
the red
shoots
really awesome.
So well. And then kind of I read a little bit more about, like, you know, shooting on film and mm-hmm. and how film is just, you know, they're trying to save it and everything's mm-hmm. so digital now and it's making me sad because I love movies on film. It just looks so different and just has such a great quality to it, mm-hmm. gritty quality, you know, romantic kind of quality to it. And I don't want to see film go away.
Yeah, there's a really interesting kind of movement going on now towards that digital where you see some people who are really embracing it, some good big directors. And then you get ones like, I think Christopher Nolan is one of the ones that embraces film still.
Mm-hmm,
You're seeing some of these, and Scorsese I think is a big one too. So there's a big kind of divide almost where people are really kind of saying, well, do we want digital or do we want the film? It makes it really interesting. But yeah, I remember seeing some of the footage at Comic-Con for Pacific Rim, and the way that they do the cameras and stuff is really cool because it's they try to put you into the action a lot more, and that plus the way that the Red Epic looks, I mean, it gives a really cool quality to it. So yeah, I think it'll look good no matter what.
Even in 2D with a Red Epic, it just looks so good.
Yeah, so I think no matter what, it'll be fine. It's just disheartening, especially for such a big director like Del Toro to kind of be forced into doing something like that. It just
says something about movie companies. I mean, it says something about big business a little bit, and mm-hmm. when it comes down to it, the director doesn't always have the end-all say-all stuff. So.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. All right, so the last big story, which it's kind of an interesting story.
I love this story, by the way.
Yeah.
In London, there are some theater that is doing this really weird thing where they have these ninjas, as they call them, but they're really just people in suits. What are the suits called? the full body suits.
Full body suits.
And they're going around and they sit in the theater in the dark, wait for people to use their phone, usually texting, but I guess no matter what it is, and then they go up to them and they tell them to shut up, basically. And they're volunteers, and that's what's so cool about it. And so basically they get to see the movies for free. I don't know if they get to see other movies for free also, but...
How do they see the movies through the morph suits, though?
I don't know. They can... I mean, I don't know if it... Like I said, I don't know if it... When they... All they're saying is that they get to see movies for free, but I don't know if that means that they're only seeing that movie for free, or if they also get, like, tickets to see other movies for free. I think that would be a good idea for them doing that. But yeah, obviously between the morph suits and then the having to actually go up to people, you're not really seeing the movie that much. but it's a really interesting thing. I mean, for me, I could see it were going wrong because it could really scare people.
Yeah, it could be really distracting.
Because I worked at a movie theater for a short time, and you know, you get people complaining about other people, and even just going in normally as a theater employee and then coming up to somebody, you can still scare them. So think about someone in this really dark, you know, this black suit covered completely. That would really terrify
somebody. I worked
at
a movie theater for many years too. So I totally feel you on that. Like people mm-hmm. complaining about people, but it's funny because like, I went and saw a movie one time. It was like Hangover 2 or something, and people were being really, really rowdy before the movie began. Mm-hmm. And some lady in the back just yelled, "Shut the F up!" like super loud at the beginning. And nice. I was like, people were like applauding her. And I was just like, thank God that somebody did this now, because it actually kept people pretty quiet the rest of the film. And honestly, I think that's the most effective thing is like, instead of people coming and being like, this lady is talking on her phone. It's like, just go up to the person and tell them to shut up. Like, tell them to leave. And then if they don't leave, then go, you know, and tell somebody in charge. But I actually
it just
prefer,
seems distracting.
Yeah, I actually prefer poison darts and crossbows.
Crossbows, yes.
Silent,
yes.
Deadly, taken out. You know, no one notices. They just kind of slump over in their seat.
Perfect.
And then we're all good.
Slingshots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's why I like the Alamo Drafthouse theaters. And sometimes I wish I lived in Austin because of that. It's a really cool theater chain, if you guys don't know much about them. And they are very strict about their texting rules and stuff. And it's like first time and you're out, pretty much. And they've had some funny, like, before the movie, some, famous people say things and do some funny skits and stuff. And one time they... actually had someone's voice message where they complained because they got kicked out. And then there's this girl who was just super mad about the fact they kicked her out. I was like, I didn't know you couldn't use your, you know, text. You couldn't text in the movie theater. I'm not bothering anybody. And, like, she just sounded completely dumb. And they put that as, like, a little thing, a video before.
So funny.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't think the ninjas are super effective. Like, they, I think, like Kelsey said, that they'd just be distracting. But stuff like that tends to work. Or, like, my favorite thing that they did before a movie was the Hunger Force, Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys ever see the beginning where it was, like, the, like, rotten food?
No.
It was like, that, yeah. God, what was the band? It was like a death metal band that sang for the food. And they were just like, shut the F up or we'll like kill you in the parking lot after the movie. They were like, we'll steal your kids and run over them. It was really funny. Like, I don't know what about it. Just, I was like crying. I was laughing so hard. And like, it starts with like the happy candy that's like coming to sing about like eating popcorn. And then the metal band's like there. Nice. Oh my gosh, it's going to really bother me that I can't remember. Mastodon.
Oh, yeah.
But if anyone ever has a chance, check it out on YouTube. It's hilarious. It's pretty good.
I think these ninjas would just be, like I said, distracting. Like, if they're on your site, you show a picture of somebody in a black bodysuit, and if that's what they really look like, that's just, first of all, laughably ridiculous. Like, are they really trying to make someone an authority figure looking like that? Because that's just ridiculous.
Well, the point is that
what if it's like the one time where, like, you actually get a text from someone, like, grandma's in the hospital.
Yeah.
The movie theater and some freaking ninja, you're already upset, like, I don't know, pops out of nowhere and then you start crying and you know,
that's what you get. Doesn't for sound like your grandma.
Like if you want to hire someone to do that, put an usher there. An usher in a regular movie theater uniform to monitor, you know, the people in the theater. That's fine. That's adequate. You don't need somebody in a camouflage bodysuit thing, you know, creeping
like
up and
lurking behind people's seats.
Lurking and throwing people, you know, taking people's phone out of there. Like, that's just ridiculous. I think it's just way over the top, it's going to be ridiculous.
I could see it backfiring because, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The theater totally could get sued, too. Like, say the full bodysuit person like touches somebody, and that's the thing too, it's like they're volunteers, they're not employees, like they probably could do whatever they want. They could tackle someone, you know, and be like, well, you didn't hire me to do this, I'm paid in movie tickets, you know. You know, what if the ninja snaps one day, he's having a bad day, he goes after some, you know, Brittany who's texting like Chad about going to the mall later. I don't know.
The ninja's having a bad day.
You know?
Well, maybe he woke up on the wrong side of the bamboo mat that day, right?
Yeah, you know? He lost some of his ninja stars.
Oh, well, I think the big thing here is that it's not just the... It's part of the theatricalness of it is, I think it's a PR move to a certain degree. You know, I mean, I've never even heard of this. It's called the Prince Charles Cinema in London. I've never even heard of this place. And so now, you know, they're getting publicity for their place. So
yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a publicity stunt to
me. Yeah, I think that's what it really ends up being. I mean, it's an interesting idea, and it brings up the larger issue of texting in theaters and people being disrespectful in theaters. But I think that's what it becomes at the end of the day for them.
It is kind of sad, though, like how... Nowadays, I mean, people can't even sit through an entire movie without – it's an addiction. I mean, there's people who can't sit through an entire movie without having a cigarette, and, like, that's because they're addicted to cigarettes. And there are people who can't sit through an entire movie without – I've heard people straight up answer their phone and have a conversation at the theater.
Yeah.
Like, it's so ridiculously rude, and when people yell at them, they give them, like, dagger eyes. And it's like, really?
Yeah, what do you expect?
You know, like, that's because that's one of my biggest pet peeves is people who are loud or distracting during a movie. It's like, leave. Go watch this at home if you want
to
do that.
It's disrespectful to everyone.
If you want to talk and text or do whatever you want, go to a drive-in. That's what drive-ins are for.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the – they mentioned it at – I think it was CinemaCon earlier this year. They mentioned the idea of having specific theaters within a movie theater, having a specific room for – people who want to text. So the idea would be, that these people could be in this theater watching a movie.
Quiet room at the church.
Yeah, it's like the opposite.
Behind a glass screen.
It's like the opposite of that, yeah. So this idea, and Tim League, who owns the Alamo Drafthouse chain, he was super against it, of course. He's like, this is, you know, people shouldn't, we shouldn't be, you know, aiding their addiction, kind of, if you will. Like you mentioned, it's their addiction. We shouldn't be enabling them. You know, we should be, you know, trying to teach these people, like, no, like, you're in a movie theater, it's disrespectful to everyone and the film. I mean, yeah. I mean, most people don't really care about that aspect of it, but you are disrespecting the film. I mean, all the people that worked in that film, because you can't pay attention, then you're obviously disrespecting all the audience members who want to actually enjoy it.
Have you guys seen the Oatmeal's version of, like, how a movie theater should be planned out?
No.
Oh, my God. Let me see if I can find a link to it. It's hilarious.
Well, and it's interesting because we were talking about I forgot what I was talking about now. Oh, right. The idea of the people not really caring about the movie, like, you should just go home. I mean, it's amazing how little people care about the movie. Working at a movie theater, also, like I said, the people, one of the things that we didn't allow is drinks and food in. And so people would come with their, like, coffee, and we have to tell them, oh, I'm sorry, you know, we have coffee inside, but you're not allowed to bring any in. And they would get really mad, of course, sometimes. And then some people would just leave. Like, you're about to spend 2 hours of your time doing something, and because you can't bring in a $3 coffee because it's Starbucks, then you're going to leave. It's like, really? Like, you're going to completely change 2 hours of your day because you couldn't bring in a coffee?
I can see that, though, too, because I think it's more of they don't want to have to buy the coffee from the movie theater. Because, I mean, when I worked at the concession stand, I just, like, people would complain about prices. And I'd be like, okay, like, lean in, come closer. I'd be like, if you have a problem, like, Thrifty is down the street. They sell this candy for $1. We sell it for $5. Make your popcorn at home. Bring a backpack. Like, stop complaining. And P.S., I don't run this movie theater. I get paid minimum wage. Stop yelling at me. You know? Yeah.
Well, it's true. It's really easy to sneak in your own food.
I don't know about you guys, but I bring an extra big person, and I have all my snacks and everything in there because, you know, they do charge, like, a gross amount of money for stuff in the theater. And I can understand why people get upset when they are told not to bring it in when you already are paying, like, $15 to see the movie.
Yeah. So. But that's not where they make the money, unfortunately. It's in the concessions. But I think it's easy to sneak in food. I mean, I've seen people sneak in all kinds of stuff. I'm sure you have too, Rose, working at theater.
Oh, my God. I've been at a theater where a guy straight up pulled out, like, a whole dinner.
Yeah.
Plate.
Yeah, I've seen that.
With,
yeah.
Like, utensils and a freaking cloth napkin. Like,
yeah, it's impressive.
It was
impressive.
A restaurant.
So. I mean, I've
seen
people sneak in all kinds
of stuff. Yeah, that is a little bit much. I mean, like, I'm talking, like, candy and, like, some popcorn, you know. But, yeah, when people bring in, like, a 3-course meal to the theater, that's just
I've seen
crazy.
A KFC bucket. I've seen someone bring in a KFC bucket. And I was like, okay.
It's a long movie, man. Come
yeah.
on.
So it's pretty crazy. I mean, there's definitely an issue there, I think, in society of people not respecting the film and the other audience members. It's just kind of sad that we've kind of really become that way, where you almost, like, I've gotten to the point where I try to choose my theater based on how I think the audience is going to be.
Totally.
Because there's so many theaters nowadays, especially in Southern California. We're so lucky that we have a lot of movie theaters. And so it's really easy to kind of, if you go to enough places, you kind of get a feel for which ones are good and bad. I know a few places that are definitely not worth going to. And then there are some that are great. So you kind of almost have to, like, figure that out, which is kind of sad.
Well, that and, like, I don't go to movies on Friday nights anymore.
Well, yeah.
I mean, when I worked at the theater, I got free tickets, obviously, all the time. And I made the mistake of one time seeing a movie on a Friday night. And it's basically like drop your kids off hour so that you don't have to, you know. Yeah, it's basically like, I feel like on Friday night, it's when all of the teenage parents hand the kid a 20 and they're like, leave for 2 hours because mom and dad need some time alone. And you can go and make out with your boyfriend. I don't care. You could go get in a knife fight. You could go scream throughout the entire movie. And they, like, bought, like, tickets to R-rated movies, and there's, like, 12-year-olds back there, like, throwing popcorn at the screen. And it's just,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you guys saw the how movie theater should be laid out thing. I put it
on, yeah,
and added
that's
the link.
Funny, yeah.
to our little conversation here.
I'll add to the link on, when I post this, because it's pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah. I think the toilet of shame is...
Nice.
With a rope ladder. Well, scary rope ladder.
And what's funny is, like, you know, you're mentioning the whole...
soundproof glass dome, and it's like, are you going through puberty wearing a diaper or picking up snarky remarks to yell at the screen?
So. You get to be in the soundproof glass dome with the continuously pump of Mountain Dew and popcorn sludge.
Well, it's funny you just mentioned the whole babysitting concept. That was something that, working at movie theater, I had someone admit that to me, that this lady had come in with her two kids that were both, one was pretty much a baby and one I think was like 3 or 4. And she basically came and said, like, look, it's cheaper just going here than it is to get a babysitter, because we were a discount movie theater. And so we had problems because the kids kept making noise. They kept having to leave the theater because she knew that they were making noise. At least that was good, but it was still kind of distracting people. And so she should have told that to me, that it was cheaper just to take them here than it is to actually have a babysitter and go herself. And it's just like, I mean, that's the reason why that's a good thing ticket movie prices are going up. So that, you know, if you actually buy a ticket, it means you'll actually pay attention. So, yeah, it's always going to be that kind of issue, I guess. So that kind of goes through our buzz. This is a very long buzz talk. So we talk about our top viral stories of the week. So one of the big things that we're covering, one of the few ARGs that are really going on, these ARGs, is Looper. So if you guys don't know, Looper is a sci-fi film that comes out in a couple weeks, end of September. It's about time travel, and it's with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis playing the same person at different times. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a hitman who kills people from the future because it's too... it's way too difficult to kill people in the future because all the science and everything can make you easily catch them. So they send him back into the past, and then someone kills him. But eventually you have to kill yourself in order to close the loop, hence the term Looper. And then, so then Bruce Willis comes back. He can't do it. And then the movie goes on into all kinds of craziness. So they've been doing this ARG, this ARG, where you actually get to be a Looper, sort of. And it's kind of all right. I feel like it could be a lot more intricate. I haven't seen a really good intricate ARG in a while, so I think we're all just kind of happy to have something. but what do you guys think of that? And I know you guys want to talk about this other this poster too.
Yeah.
The first way I heard about Looper was that my roommate comes home and she says, "I saw the most frightening movie poster today, or movie advertisement today, on the side of a bus," and she comes to tell me about Looper and how Joseph Gordon-Levitt looks so weird. Yeah. He just looks so CGI'd up and like just weird. He doesn't look like himself. They're trying to make him look like Bruce Willis, and yeah. I get it that it's supposed to be him, but I mean, he scares me a little bit.
I don't know. Yeah, it's funny because when I mean, it looks like an incredible movie, and I was really excited when I heard about it. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, the makeup is really good, but it's. I don't know. Weird. He looks like he's wearing makeup, you know, like he's wearing prosthetics.
He's scary. And,
well, because you're so used to, I think people are so used to seeing Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face.
Yeah, you know, I feel like if they used an actor that wasn't as famous and did this, it would have worked a little bit better. But people know it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and they're just going to sit there and think about that the whole time.
Well, what's weird about it is that, so,
it is distracting a little bit.
And it's funny because... I can never say if his name's Ryan or Rian. I think it's Rian Johnson, the director and writer of the movie. He mentioned that he actually wrote this movie for Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Because
they had worked together before. I think it was Brick was the movie that they did together.
Yeah.
I did an interview with them at WonderCon, and he mentioned that they did specifically written it for Joseph, and that they basically had to find someone who was also kind of had some star power to be the older version of him. And so Bruce Willis came along, and you're not really going to ask Bruce Willis to put on prosthetics because he's Bruce Willis.
Right, exactly.
And so he said, well, you know,
so just
Joseph Gordon-Levitt will do it. And he was cool with it. But it's funny because you think you wrote this for a specific person, yet you put him in all this prosthetics. But apparently he worked really hard on it in terms of, you know, getting Bruce Willis's mannerisms down and everything. And, he worked really hard on that part of it, which is
I think they could have done it without using the prosthetics. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I see movies nowadays where they have two actors playing the same person, like young and old, and they don't go through that much trouble to make them look that similar, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't need to do all this. I mean, even if they didn't look 100% identical, at least they look a little similar. And honestly, it's a movie. Like, the audience is going to dismiss the rest anyways if the movie is good enough and you sell us on the rest of the movie. Yeah, totally. You know what I mean? All I'm going to be seeing is, like, he looks so weird. Like, we know his face, just like you said, I think, Dan. You know, we know his face. It's like, it's just strange to me the way that it looks.
Well, on top of that, too, it's like he looks so fake to me. He looks like something out of a... like a different movie. If everyone's face looked like that, maybe I would believe it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of made everyone, but I mean, it's almost too much. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was a distracting thing for me when I saw the trailer. Like, I was like, whoa, this is weird. Like, maybe watching the movie will be a different experience, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, the kind of effort they put in to make it wasn't too much, to my understanding. It's mostly like in the brows and stuff like that. But they definitely to have to go through that kind of makeup. And then did anybody notice that during the making of it? That it's like, hey, this looks kind of weird. I don't know. Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, I've seen some of the reviews coming out of Toronto Film Festival where they debuted this and it got some really good reviews. So I'm hoping that the idea is that once you start sitting down and watching the movie,
it kind of
washes away. It washes away a little bit, hopefully. It's definitely kind of interesting. And you, if you know anything about Bruce Willis, you kind of figure that would be the case, that he wouldn't make the effort to be anything like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It would have to be...
Right. You want me to change something?
Yeah, exactly. You knew that it would have to be him. So.
I'm Bruce Willis.
Exactly.
So when I saw this on the itinerary of things, I immediately thought of this poster that actually Joseph Gordon-Levitt posted it on his Tumblr, and I follow him on Tumblr, and it's pretty amazing. I'll find the original link on his Tumblr and send it to you, Dan. Mm-hmm. But basically, somebody... changed the poster to Pooper. And it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
There's all kinds of comments on it where they've changed words to mean versions of poop or to mention poop.
And it's like, because it's supposed to say like, hunted by yourself, haunted by your past or something, but it's like hunted by your poo-poo, haunted by your past meals.
It's pretty funny.
When you gotta go, you gotta go.
Yeah, fake reviews.
I gotta go, so do I. I love that it says number 2 at the box office. they changed September to septic.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Shitten and directed by instead of written.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But yeah, I guess like the director found it at first, and then Joseph Gordon-Levitt was posting on his blog asking who is responsible because they thought it was really, really funny.
I know. This is a better viral than the actual ARG they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would go see this movie.
Just for that?
Yeah.
The poster, I mean, obviously the poster that you guys are talking about is based on a real poster. And a lot of people have been commenting on it, how weird it is where they have like him inside of the other one. And yeah. I mean, is that kind of weird to you guys? I mean, it kind of reminds me of the X-Men posters before they took them down, the first class ones, where they had like the shadow of them inside the person. It was weird. I mean, what do you think that the idea of how the original poster kind of looks?
I think it looks okay, but
it looks like Bruce Willis is about to alien himself out of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's body.
Like, alien chest bursting.
Yeah, he's going to, like, crawl out.
That I would see that.
I don't know.
I mean, it kind of sells the idea, like, that he's, you know, him and the future.
Yeah, I guess I never really, like, took a good look at it. It didn't really freak me out or anything. But now that you mention it, it does kind of look weird.
It's like...
Yeah, it's like he's a like mini robot controlling Joseph Gordon-Levitt or something.
All these are ideas where I would actually watch the movie if that were the case.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
He's actually like a half-sized man living in a regular-sized man, and he controls his body.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
So another thing that we've been covering this week that people have been really talking about is the social film called The Beauty Inside. It's made by Toshiba and Intel, who did a previous social film that we covered called Inside, and that was with Emmy Rossum, and it was this kind of like thriller thing where she gets kidnapped. Kind of ended on a note where people weren't satisfied with it because it didn't give a lot of answers. So it was kind of interesting to see them go at it again, but from a totally different angle, doing this more kind of romantic comedy with a little bit of a sci-fi twist. The idea is that this guy, Alex, who's internally voiced by Topher Grace, he is changes every day to a different body, completely different body. And he's kind of become accustomed to that. But then he meets this girl, Leia, who is played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I can never say her name right.
Winstead?
Winstead, there you go. And so, who is many people know her from, like, Scott Pilgrim and other movies. And so,
oh, yeah, that is her.
Yeah, and so the, and it's gotten a lot of really good reviews. They're on episode 5 out of 6. Episode 6 debuts on Wednesday. So it's gotten a lot of positive feedback from the views. Each one of the episodes has gotten usually in that 100 to 200,000 views.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're kind of going, it's gotten almost very, you see the comments in the green, you know, on YouTube, you see the green and the red, and the green bar's way up, more than the red.
Oh, wow.
So, it's got a lot of good response, especially for something that's technically an advertisement to a certain degree, because it is made by Toshiba and Intel. It features their, Toshiba, I think it's their Ultrabook. And so, I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, I know you guys have just seen the trailer mostly of it, but, what do you guys think of the whole concept and everything, especially as something that's more of an advertisement, but like a much better advertisement?
I think it's great. It's an advertisement, but it's also going, I think, towards a different way of doing it. You know, you're mm-hmm. using this kind of heartfelt sort of relationship-y, friendship-y, or will they, won't they sort of thing to really sell a laptop, you know, and it seems to be working. I watched a trailer and I was like, this seems cool. Is it a movie? No, it's an advertisement. So, you know, but it seems cool. I think it's interesting. It's a really, really good marketing technique, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I just watched the trailer for the first time like 5 minutes ago, and I actually think it looks really, really awesome too. Like, I'm kind of sold. I want to watch it now. It's got an interesting premise, and I kind of don't care that it's a commercial, but I mean, yeah. They found an interesting way to pull people in.
Mm-hmm. And as someone who's actually watched all the episodes so far, it's very subtle the way that they've done the.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is one of the cool things they've done with this is being the reason they're calling it a social film is you can actually be part of it because since he can be anybody, he could be you because there's parts of the episodes where you see kind of almost like a little montage of him just talking into the webcam, but it's really, you know, just people that are fans of the series. And so
it's, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's a really cool way to get part of it. And they also do their Facebook page where they post as Alex, and basically anybody can be on there, and he'll do themes like, oh, here are some crazy places I've been, and they just find people who have been to crazy places, and they pretend like it's them.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so it's a really great way to get people involved, and it's gotten a lot of people talking about it. So I really like the idea of how they're doing it, and it's actually a really good story. So far, we'll see how it ends, but I like where it's going so far, and it has some good actors in it. And like I said, it's really subtle. Most of the time it's just him talking on it. It's his way of documenting his experience is that every day he makes sure that he says something to his webcam. It's pretty subtle. I mean, it's a really fun kind of idea. That's why I like the other thing they did called Inside, and these kind of really alternative ways to advertise something. And you see a few of these, we've mentioned one that, on the website, AT&T was doing one, and I know we mentioned it when it first came out. We didn't really follow up too much on it, but they did like this whole kind of like web series. So I really like that idea of these, you know, kind of really more intricate advertisements, because now we're in a day of YouTube where YouTube kind of rules all. And so to really kind of utilize that and do something a lot more interesting, get people invested in what you're talking about. That's a lot. Yeah. I mean, you can get a lot more out of it than just doing a commercial.
I think it's cool too, because especially with YouTube, you know, being as popular as it is, as well as things like, I mean, look at the Canon 5D Mark III, not just came out, but recently, and it's only like $3,000, and you could mm-hmm. shoot YouTube quality, you know, internet quality short film on it, and right. people do all the time, and I think it brings things down to a small scale, and anybody can make a short movie if they really want to, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think this actual series, I mean, just on the episodes we've seen so far, it doesn't look like it costs that much. It has good quality too, and just you can tell from the trailer alone, but also just watching it, you can tell it has a good film kind of quality to it. But, you know, the sets aren't too elaborate or anything. It's not anything crazy. It's a very kind of small film, but it's very engaging, and you know, if you were to think about it, you figure, oh, this can't cost that much, but you don't really care because you're watching this really good story.
Yeah, and I think that's the key too, is that anybody could do it, but it's the story that sells it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really good story and a good idea. And I love that they are allowing the audience to interact and be a part of it. Mm. I mean, I kind of wish I knew about this earlier because I totally would have loved to, tried to contribute and everything. I think that's awesome.
If you read our site more often, then maybe you'll...
Dang!
Damn!
Someone's not reading the
Shut
site.
Shut down!
Just saying. We covered this. That's why we covered this stuff, so people get involved.
Movie viral now.
There you go.
Start.
I appreciate that, Rose. So another big web series that's been going on right now is called H+, the digital series, which is executive produced by Bryan Singer, who many know as a pretty famous director behind the first two X-Men movies, the unfortunate Superman Returns, and also was a producer on House. One of the creators, I think he's the creator of it, actually. And so it's this whole idea that in the future, not too far future, this thing called H+ gets invented, where it's basically a computer chip that can go in your brain, and you have computer and internet access all the time. It kind of does this like whole heads-up display kind of thing. So it's really cool, but until someone creates this virus that is this wireless virus that kind of spreads across the world and kills pretty much anybody that has it. So there's only a select few people that are either out of the range or don't have the device, and the web series kind of goes through their kind of thing, both before and after and during the event. So it's kind of interesting. It's been told in a really weird way where they're really short. Like every week they release, I think, like 4 or 6 episodes, and they're only like 3 or 4 minutes long. So some people have been kind of complaining about that. And they aren't told linearly at all. Like I said, there's some before, some after, some during. And it's kind of confusing. They do have a website where you can kind of help kind of piece it together in the right way. But I think there's been a lot of complaints about the idea of how they're releasing it. And so, what do you guys think about that?
To release anything non-linearly, I think, is a risk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen any of this or heard of it before. It looks very interesting. But
is the series over already, or has it wrapped up?
No, they're still in it. I think it's supposed to be several months long. And considering that they've done only a short. Really short episodes, it's not too surprising that they're trying to make it last longer. Yeah, that's the idea, is that they're trying to make it last. I forget how many months it's supposed to be. It's like 6 months or something. So, you know, it's kind of a weird thing, and we haven't covered the last set of episodes, but the idea is pretty good. It has a good production value to it, definitely. They're putting some money behind it.
Yeah.
I
mean, it sounds like an interesting story. I could totally see that happening. Like, it would be kind of awesome, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't mind things being like kind of. I mean, if you look at Lost, I never even watched Lost, but I know that was a pretty confusing show and very nonlinear, and it was still really successful. So I feel like there's a way you can do nonlinear and still be really successful with it, and keep a lot of people like still watching. So I'm wondering if that's where they're failing, if there's like too much of a disconnect between the episodes, and there's totally a way you can still connect the episodes and make sense. So I don't know. I kind of want to check it out for myself now and see what's going on.
I think it goes back to what we were talking about with The Matrix, though, too, and Avatar, is that hopefully, you know, I don't know about hopefully, but maybe if he has all of this story worked out already, whoever's writing it, that it's being shot in a way that will make sense at the end, you know what I mean? Whereas if he doesn't, and he's just kind of shooting from the hip at this point, maybe there's room for it to get messed up and not be as good as it could be, you know?
That's where I'm wondering if, like, maybe then when they started writing this, they didn't have it completely
plan everything out.
Yeah, which is, you have to do that if you're going to shoot something like this. Like, I mean, I think of Memento, and, like, that movie was really, really successful, and the way that it was shot, you know, it is kind of confusing, but it makes it work really, really well. So the way that they, and you were saying, like, they show things before and after, and I don't know if maybe that's why it's just too confusing, is they're not choosing to show the episodes in the right order, even if they wanted to show it nonlinear, maybe they needed to have a method to the madness, and they're not kind of getting it right. And
what's the interesting thing that's what we've started seeing afterwards, they were fielding a lot of questions and complaints on their YouTube channels, on the YouTube channel and all the videos, and they were actually having to reply to people. And then what they ended up doing is doing annotated versions of the episode. So they would actually publish a new video on their YouTube page that this time had annotations. So that you could actually connect some of the dots and everything. And they've even had a few interviews with like the creators and stuff where they've talked about it. There's a new kind of playlist concept now where you can actually watch certain ones in order without the credits. Because like almost like, I want to say like almost a minute and a half of these videos is just credits. And
what?
I know, it's crazy. And so there's this playlist that they kind of have in there that you can play with yourself that lets you kind of cut out the credits and you can just watch them in order without the credits. So it's like, it seems like they're making a huge effort here to kind of now help people kind of go the direction they need to go. And it feels a little bit like they're playing catch up. Like all of a sudden people are like, what the hell is this? And they're like, oh God, we got to help these people. And it kind of looks like it's desperate a little bit.
I was going to say, if the fact that they have to explain things to people, to mm-hmm. me, they're not doing their job as writers. They're not getting it across well
enough. Exactly.
It's not.
I mean, was just going to say that too. Like, yeah. It seems like a cool little extra thing, but you know, I think, Rose, you said earlier that you kind of like when movies can leave something at the end up to vague and maybe up to your interpretation. And and I think that that's true. Like, I don't need you to sit there and explain everything to me throughout the film for it to be good or to make sense. Like, if you want to leave it a little open-ended, that's okay. You know, it's why I hated Paranormal Activity's alternate ending, or actually the ending at all, because it had this huge block of text, you know, that was totally unnecessary about cops came in and arrested her for this, da-da-da-da, she was never found again. And like, you didn't need that. You could have ended the film right there and not had the paragraph, right. And it would have been fine. You know, I don't really think that they, like you said, I completely agree with you that if you put up this text about, follow this, this means this, like, I don't need to explain your story to me.
Yeah, you actually have to sit down and, like, explain things to people. It should be vague, but it should be clear enough that people can connect the dots.
You know?
And even, like, with Memento, I mean, that movie was pretty freaking vague, but it was still, like, there was still a connect enough that you could watch it and know what was going on. Or even with Lost, I definitely think Lost was one of those things where you didn't know what was going on all the time, but you knew enough that you understood each episode and where it fit in with everything. And I didn't even watch Lost and I knew that, you know. And I think that there's a really what they're trying to do can be done. It's really hard. So I can understand why they had issues with it. And right. It sucks because it sounds like a really cool story, but it's just being executed poorly. And unfortunately, I think that happens a lot in Hollywood. I see trailers for movies and I think they're going to be so amazing. And then you actually go and watch it and it's just a disappointment because they could have done so much with it and they didn't, you know? So
I found some article on the LA Times about it. And the very end of the article is a quote from co-writer and co-creator John Cabrera, who says, "We set out to write a non-linear story. The big question for this disjointed story was whether there were ways to view it that felt good. At a certain point, we started to realize that might be something we put into the hands of the audience." So it sounds like maybe it's not all written yet. They don't really have a master plan for it. And I think that you know these things with putting the annotations and putting stuff in linear order is kind of like scrambling to maybe make it a little more easy to understand or grasp. And you know what
it
I mean?
It sounded like they wanted the audience to participate in what happens. But the problem is when you already have something complicated like that can – and you don't have it written out and you don't know where it's going, that doesn't sound like a really good
plan.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound like a good plan.
Well, I think what's interesting about it is that, you know, maybe the audience wasn't quite ready for what they were trying to do. You know, I think they wanted to do this whole interactive experience where you kind of had to put the pieces together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. I think people just kind of saw it as a web series. It's just something that we can watch in order, maybe get to think about it a little bit, but it's not something where you have to really put much effort into. And so I think people kind of came into it a little bit differently than what they wanted.
You're always taking a risk when you want the audience to put in some effort because people are lazy and they just want to watch things brainlessly. I mean, it's true. They want to just go and watch things and have it laid out for them pretty much. And you got to think about your audience, and a lot of people don't like it. I mean, a lot of people don't even like open-ended movies at the end. They hate that, you know, when there's like a question of doubt of what happens, which I personally love. But I know a lot of people who have issues with movies that leave things open because they're like, no, I want to know. Yeah. I want to know. And it's like, no, you think about the movie and you decide on your own. And then it's good because people are talking about that movie for years and they're sitting and having arguments about the ending or what this meant or, you know, so.
Well, I think that the way that The Beauty Inside has done it is a great way of doing it, where if you're someone who doesn't want to participate, you can just watch the web series. That's a very enthralling web series. But if you do want to get involved, you can go on their Facebook and try to, you know, submit your videos or your pictures and stuff, and then you could become part of it, whether it be just on their Facebook feed or maybe even in their episodes. So it's a great way to kind of do both. You know, it allows people to be involved, but not actually, but you can still enjoy the actual film part of it without being involved. And obviously they had a different goal, but still, I think those are two different things that are going on right now where they're both kind of interactive in a certain way. And one's really, I think, working a lot better than the other.
Yeah, you made a good point with that. And it's interesting that you chose these two to kind of compare and contrast, because it seems like The Beauty Inside is doing it quite well, where, like you said, you can, if you don't want to participate, you can just watch the web series and that's that. But it sounds like H+, they want you to participate, and it's kind of not the quality, but like the story is kind of depending on the people participating or buying into, you know, the marketing. And maybe that's why it's not working, or the audience is kind of complaining a bit. So
yeah, it's always challenging when you have to explain something. I mean, one of the things we've mentioned in our previous viral campaigns for films is sometimes they try to go too far, they try to do too much. And a great example of that was 2012. They had a really, actually, the ARG was probably better than the movie. It was very intricate and very interesting. But it got to the point where they actually created a website that would piece together everything that had happened so far. This was only maybe a month or two before the movie came out, but it was very complicated because they had different threads going at the same time. And if you were just trying to jump into it, it was incredibly hard. And you know, we saw that ourselves whenever we try to write an article. It's really hard to kind of, because you have to sum everything up a little bit, and it was getting harder and harder to sum everything up. And so Sony actually ended up creating a website where you can go and you could literally just kind of follow the path. They did that even for the Men in Black 3 viral campaign that almost no one followed. They did the same thing. Sometimes it's like you almost kind of put yourself in a hole where you go, where you become too complicated. So it's kind of interesting to see them realize that and then try to fix it. And we saw that with H+, them trying to fix it a little bit. It does have a sense of kind of desperation or backtracking a little bit, where you're kind of going, oh, maybe this wasn't such a great idea.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see them do that. But go down to our open discussion. And so, I mean, do you guys have anything, stories this week, any kind of film stuff you guys want to talk about?
Stuff. I'm so pumped for the new X-Men movie. I'm so excited. X-Men, Days of Future Past. I'm so excited.
I didn't even know they were doing another one. This is sad.
I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Did you guys see the new RoboCop suit that was released today, Sunday? They had the weird kind of, it's like all black and everything. It looks almost like the Dark Knight, as Kelsey mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think about
that? Oh, yeah, the RoboCop guy? Yeah. That looks cool.
Did you guys see the original?
I had nightmares about RoboCop, so. Rose, you had nightmares about the Liquid Man. I had nightmares about RoboCop, so I'm not really all about the RoboCop remake.
I'm not down for that. I don't want to relive that part of my past.
I love the RoboCop movies, so I don't know. Like, it's weird that they're remaking it. I can kind of get it. Like, you want to update it and make it cool, because there's some really great social commentary in those first ones. They're a little cheesy, but there's some good social commentary, and so to see them kind of try to update that is interesting. But you know, the suit looks weird, although I've heard that there's other suits that they're going to use too at various times, for like, it's because they're constantly like updating it, I think is the idea in the movie. So maybe this is just like one version of the suit, but I kind of miss the silver.
Yeah. Dan, did you hear about this Elysium thing?
Well, we've been covering the very lukewarm viral campaign for it.
Oh, yeah.
So they have a website and right now, and they've kind of, like, every time there's been, like, a convention, they've done a little bit of something to kind of start it up again, but nothing's really come of it. Mm-hmm. However, their current thing has a countdown till sometime in December. I forget the date. And so I think that's where they're going to really pick up, is in December, because I believe the movie comes out in March. So this is going to be something where they are really going to start their campaigning in December. So the movie looks awesome. We saw some footage at Comic-Con, and it looks amazing. I mean, it's Neil Blomkamp who did District 9. So it's nice. There's a lot.
That's why I asked.
Yeah, there's a lot to expect from it. But it looked really good. And it was one of those things where he got some good talent in there, because he had not only Matt Damon, he has Jodie Foster.
Matt Damon.
So
I could help myself.
Someone asked him about that during that panel for Elysium.
What?
Someone asked him. Well, they mentioned something about, like, his previous work, and they said something about Team America, and he's like, "I actually wasn't in Team America."
Sounded just like you.
Yeah, and he's like, "I love that, and the movie's great, and his guys are funny as hell, but that wasn't me." It was really funny, but they were mentioning that about the whole, you know, that there's a lot of good talent in this movie, and so they mentioned the reason why they all of them came on is because they read the script and they were just blown away by the script. So, you know, I'm excited to see where they're going with it. Once again, it's Neil Blomkamp doing a pretty awesome sci-fi concept that also has a really good social commentary. So, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it looks kind of cool.
Yeah, so the campaign is a little bit focused around the idea that they have, like, a lottery or something like that, so you can go up there to the thing. Because the whole idea is that there's the Earth sucks right now. It's in the future, and the Earth is all, like, polluted and crappy. And so the rich people live up in the space station, like Wall-E style. And then all the poor people live on Earth, and they have to, like, do crappy work and stuff. And so Matt Damon's one of the poor people, and he has to find a way to get up to the spaceship. So it's a class
sounds
structure.
Sounds cool.
It does sound cool. I like that idea.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, because District 9 I thought was just awesome.
I love District 9.
You like District 9, Dan? I was not even aware. I thought you didn't even really...
Mm-hmm. That's the movie that kicked off our whole website.
Yeah. So.
But it's actually really good. I showed it to my dad about a couple months ago, because he hadn't seen it yet. And I was like, oh, you have to see it. It's really good. And at the end, I was like, oh, what'd you think? He's like, it was all right. I was like, come on! It was...
All right!
Yeah, he's never impressed. I try to show him movies where I'm like, this is so good, and he watches it, and he's always like, it's all right. He's like, my favorite movie is The Substitute 4 or something. Like, really cheesy, crappy action movies he likes. But but I really like them.
Did you guys watch, or were you guys into the Star Trek movie from 2009?
The Big Trekkie, so of course.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
They announced that the title of the sequel.
Oh, yes.
As Star Trek Into Darkness, but I guess there's, like, this huge kerfluffle that there's no punctuation. So it's just, like, Star Trek Into Darkness instead of, like, Star Trek colon Into Darkness.
Yeah, it's weird. We talked about it in our buzz last week, because, like, right when I was writing it, it had become a rumor, and so I mentioned it, and it got a lot of people talking online, and it's a really weird title. At the end of the day, it's kind of a weird title. They've never done that before. They've never done a title that didn't have the colon if they had something other than Star Trek. They've never had that. And it's like a sentence, and it's a weird kind of a sentence. I don't know.
I mean, what do you guys think about, like, can a title ruin a movie? Can a title curse a movie? Does it matter? Does it not?
I'm trying to think of a movie that had a really crappy title but was really good. it's hard to think of one.
Doctor Strangelove.
Yeah, but I mean, that kind of almost encapsulated the concept of this movie, because it was a little bit of a strange movie, but...
just like, because it was Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Atomic Bomb or something. I mean, that was a pretty long, kind of weird title for a movie. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's just the first one to come to mind.
People complained about The Dark Knight Rises because it wasn't very original. They just added one word to the sequel.
Yeah.
So I know people complain about that, but I thought that was really good. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, I'm just trying to think of any movie with a terrible name. I mean, Geely is a pretty terrible name, and that was a pretty bad movie. So maybe that is kind of bad. But at the end of the day, it's all about the content. I mean, I think they can only really go up. Because, I mean, I was amazed by how good Star Trek, the 2009 one, was, especially because they filmed that during the writer's strike. So they couldn't make any edits to the script. Which, if you've ever heard about how any movie's made, they're constantly making edits to the script. So the fact that they were able to make that and it was still good is really impressive. So now that they actually have time to kind of, you know, they work on the script and as things are going along, you can make changes. I'm excited to see how they play that. And if it follows anything of the original Star Trek series, the second one should be awesome. Because Wrath of Khan is like the best Star Trek movie.
Yeah. I'm super excited. I loved the first one.
I loved it too.
And so I hope that this sequel is good. And the title kind of hit me. Yeah, I was kind of like, this is a little weird title. But it didn't, like you said, Dan, I think, you know, the content is going to be most important. People are going to see it no matter what. I mean, it's a sequel. They know that they liked the first one. They're probably going to like this one, you know.
I think it also gets people talking about the movie, you know. Yeah. Like, even if it's this weird, like, you know, they don't understand what it's kind of saying. And people are obviously talking about the title. That, I mean, what is it? No press is bad press, or no bad press.
It's
the
same
bad publicity. I'm really tired.
Yeah.
People are talking about the movie, whether it's good or bad, and it's just the title. It's not the actual movie that is getting, you know, put down.
Yeah, the whole thing.
I'm gonna see it. I don't care what it's called. It could be called Star Trek Into the Toilet Bowl, and I'd be like, cool, let's do this.
It'd be the most amazing movie about a toilet bowl.
It would be a double feature with Pooper.
Oh, Pooper, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, the whole idea of how important a name is, I think, is overblown sometimes when people hear about the name. Because nowadays we're in this whole news cycle concept, like just how you have 24-hour news cycles on TV, on the internet, it's the same way, where it's like, we're constantly getting little bits and pieces of movie news as they come about. So they want to grasp onto anything and overanalyze it. And I think with the title, that's a great example. I mean, you know, everyone is looking so much to figure out what the movie's about, because they've been very coy about it. I mean, there's been all these rumors about if it's going to be about Khan again, or if it's going to be another one from the series, or there's a couple different rumors out there, but no one really knows. And so now it's like, here's just one little extra bit of information, you know, it's a pretty big concept. You know, this whole movie title is a pretty big thing. So there's a lot of overanalysis of it, I think. And I think we'll kind of forget about it after a while.
Yeah, totally.
Because it won't really mean much anymore.
Yeah.
Are you guys excited for Dread?
No.
That comes out next week. I think it looks pretty cool. I got some good reviews out of Comic-Con. I didn't see it there, but I got some good reviews coming out of it. So I don't know. The first one's obviously pretty bad with Stallone, but I mean it has Carl Urban, who's from Star Trek, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's the main the Bones character. He's the main guy.
But he's in Dread also.
He is Dread.
Oh.
So he's a good actor. I've seen him in a few other things too, and he's great, obviously, as Bones. So, it's kind of interesting. It looks a little cheesy still, but I don't know. Did you guys watch the Lincoln trailer?
Yes, it looks so good.
I want to. Well, I saw that it was on IMDb, and I meant to watch it because I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I am obsessed with him, and I'm so excited for this movie.
It looks so good.
I was like one of the few people that wasn't too impressed with it. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be great because it's Spielberg, and it's Lincoln. It's a movie that he's been trying to do for a while. But for some reason, I wasn't hugely impressed. I'm not a big Daniel Day-Lewis fan, to be honest.
What? I'm not either.
Will Be Blood was terrible. New York, come on, The Last of the Mohicans.
There Will Be Blood was a terrible film.
I don't know.
I'm one of the few people that did not like There Will Be Blood. I thought it was terrible. He was overacting the entire time.
You thought that movie was terrible, Dan?
Yes. He was overacting most of the time. It was very little dialogue, and like they had
that's
weird.
What makes it so great?
It had weird music. It had horror movie music.
And awesome, and I don't know, that movie. Just,
it was this weird drama.
I was on
that
the edge of my seat the entire time. I just was totally enthralled. But I saw that movie with Kelsey, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's right. Got, yeah.
Remember, didn't someone bring like a 3-year-old kid into that movie?
I think so.
And we were like, really?
That kid's gonna hate milkshakes now.
What?
Yeah.
The kid's gonna hate milkshakes. I drink your milk. Yeah, the
how do you not like that movie, Dan? It's so good.
Again, like I said, because there's very little dialogue, and it's really like the first like half hour is like nothing said, and then it has weird horror movie music, like, and it's like as though it's a way to like amp up a scene that's not very interesting, and he's super overacting, and it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I was not a fan.
The music is the best part, in my opinion. The music just. It unsettled me, which I feel like that's how you're supposed to kind of feel the entire movie, is just kind of, like, just it, I don't know, it prods at you and, like, makes you feel uncomfortable. And
yeah, but not
yeah, I agree. I think it totally, due to the lack of dialogue, the music had to be good, and it was. It totally delivered.
I felt like it just was out of place. And maybe that's part of what it was supposed to do, but it just felt out of place to me. Mm-hmm. And I actually watched it with... you guys remember my friend Ryan? We both were just like, "This is terrible." We also watched No Country for Old Men. I didn't really like it. I thought it was.
Oh my god! Okay, I just had a conversation at work on Friday about how There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men were like two of my most favorite. Like I don't know when they came out, it restored my faith in cinema. Because both of those movies were so great to me.
From Justin and to Kelly,
it's funny that you hated both of them.
from Justin to Kelly and Geely restored my faith because they came out the same year.
Yeah, and that's why I remember seeing both of them, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, both of these movies were so amazing!" And just I don't know, they kept me on the edge of my seat. I wanted to know what was going on, and they, you know, they weren't like the most I don't know how to explain it, like. Complicated stories, but they were interesting to me for some reason.
I never saw No Country for Old Men.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I love the Coen brothers. I love them. I love their attention to like small characters, and I like that movie a lot.
We will agree to disagree.
Poor to a lot of movies, though. To be honest, this year has kind of let me down. Like, I can't think of one movie that was just incredible that I saw in the theater.
Avengers?
So I'm kind of hoping that since we're getting closer to Christmas, there'll be some good ones coming out. Like, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, I'm excited for.
Django Unchained looks really good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Quentin Tarantino.
Great Gatsby?
Oh, yeah, Great Gatsby looks really good. Oh,
don't get me started on The Great Gatsby.
No, you're not excited?
No, you know, I love Boz, and I love all the films, so when I heard he was making it, I was really excited, and when I saw the trailer, because I loved that book, reading it, like, growing up, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my god, he just took a huge crap on The Great Gatsby.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. It looks atrocious. It just looks so bad.
Like, Gazlerman made me want to be a director. Modern
and, oh,
Gazlerman made me want to be a director, so I have a soft spot for him in my heart. So.
I normally like his stuff, but man, that's not The Great Gatsby to me. And I was really excited about all the people who are going to be in it. Like, I think the actors were well chosen, but I can't do this weird camera stuff. Like, I've always seen it as a pretty realistic story about, like, I mean, F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like he had something to say about New York in the 20s, and it's like, this is not New York in the 20s. This is like a fake New York in the 20s. This is not how it was.
Very stylized.
He modernizes everything that he does.
Very stylized.
So
yeah.
That kind of bothered me.
Do you guys, speaking of which, I just finally saw about a week ago, I think, Midnight in Paris.
I love
so
that
good.
Movie.
So
it's
good.
A great movie.
I didn't watch it for a while because I'm not a huge Woody Allen fan. And also, funny enough, when we showed it at the theater I was working at, this old couple came out and said it was terrible. And that usually doesn't sway me one way or the other, but for some reason that stuck in my head. And I just never bothered watching it. And then finally I decided to watch it, and I was like, damn, it was like really good, actually.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was really good. So
yeah, I liked it.
That's New York. That's Paris in the 20s.
I feel like that, like, if... I actually feel like if Woody Allen did The Great Gatsby, it would have been better. Because, like, that was...
Oh, Lord.
Michael Bay doing The Great Gatsby. I'm just kidding. That would be amazing.
Woody Allen, Great Gatsby, let's do this.
Oh.
That'd be interesting.
Cloud Atlas looks really interesting.
Yeah, that was really good. I mean, the Wachowskis are crazy. And yeah, so I love their stuff. And I want to read the book now because the stories and how they interconnect is so interesting.
Yeah, I definitely want to read the book before the movie comes out just because it looks like it's pretty involved. And I feel like if you don't, you might be a little bit confused about what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully the idea is that the movie can speak for itself.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, like, I always feel like before a movie comes out that's based on a book, it's like that internal struggle of whether or not you want to read it before or after.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if you read it before, it ruins the movie. Sometimes if you read it after, it ruins the book. So it's like, yeah. What do you do?
I like to watch the movie first because for some reason I read books, it's hard for me to envision something. And if I do finally kind of like come with a vision of how things are, and then I watch the movie, it's like, well, that's not how I envisioned it. But if I do it the other way around, then I already have, like, I read The Hunger Games after I saw the movie. And I was like, okay, I know what Katniss looks like, so I'm fine. I know what Peeta looks like, I'm fine. And you can just kind of read it. You don't have to worry about trying to envision the world. Yeah, and that may be very counterintuitive to a creative mind, but for some reason, to a certain degree, I like that more. To be able to already have that in your mind. Because like when I read the second book for Hunger Games, because I had already kind of created that in my mind, I read it almost right after the first one. I was able to really kind of create this whole lush environment that I was able to experience because I didn't have to work so hard for the other one. It's hard to explain that, but
then people like, I mean, if you've read The Hunger Games second book, so you have people like Finnick Odair who like weren't in the first one.
Yeah.
Do you still struggle with that? Like trying to, and like recreate the arena in your head? Like,
well, that's the thing. I mean, like, because you kind of have the tone from the first one, you can kind of extrapolate. And actually it's funny because the guy that they have for the movie, I forget this guy's name. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff like that. And I forget the actor's name now. Oh, it was Sam Claflin. He's almost exactly how I envisioned him, which is kind of funny. I know some people complain when they had a few of the potentials, and he was one of them, and then people were kind of saying, oh, he doesn't really seem like it. For some reason, it's almost exactly how I envisioned him. So sometimes you get that kind of weird experience like that. It's like, damn, that's exactly what I thought he would look like.
Oh, he does look like what I thought he would look like.
Yeah, see? and he's like good cast.
Dark-haired, like, charming kind of person, you know?
They have a good cast for that one. That one should be coming out, too. I think Jennifer Lawrence was talking about they were filming that before they filmed X-Men. So, or is it the way around? I forget.
Is she in
we're filming that right now.
Is she in the next X-Men that's coming out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's a big star. Of course they're going to put her in there.
Because I don't know anything. Because I saw the last X-Men, the one where it was like a prequel.
Yeah, the First Class.
Yeah.
I really like that movie a lot. I thought it was really, really well done. Yeah. And I'm wondering what the next X-Men that's coming out is. Is it going to be those characters? Yes. Or is it going to be...
Yeah, that's why I was so excited. Because I loved First Class. And Days of Future Past is like a sequel to First Class.
Yeah.
So.
No, yeah, and it's supposed to be in this, I think it's supposed to still take place in the 60s, but I forget. They mentioned that Days of Future Past is based on a comic book story, and I forget what the story is now, but I remember thinking, like, damn, that's a pretty cool story that they're going to kind of base it off of. So, yeah, she's going to be in that one, obviously, because she was a big character in the first one, and she's a big star. Yeah, so... Yeah, there's some good ones with her coming out. I don't know, her face looks kind of weird to me, but I still like her.
I think they did a good job. See, here's an example of someone. She obviously doesn't look exactly like Rebecca. What's her last name?
Romaine.
Romaine.
Oh, just Romaine now, sorry.
but she, like that scene where she morphs into her when he's like, oh, you should be older. Like, it looks like what she would look like when she was older, and they didn't, you know, have her wear prosthetic to look more like Rebecca Romijn.
Would have
been, you know?
Would have been tough, because, I mean, for that one little cameo scene, I can't imagine them putting on prosthetics on her for one cameo scene. So that would be weird. And obviously, you're not going to put them on Rebecca, because we know her from the series. So, but yeah, I mean, like, and no one questioned. No one thought, well, she's not going to look like that. Like, no one really said that. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good example where you don't really need it, because it's already in people's mind that they can kind of ignore that a little bit and just embrace it.
Well, it looked to me, I mean, they did a good job. Like, I feel like she does look like she could eventually look like Rebecca Romijn, you know.
Well, I mean, look at the main characters in that movie. I mean, Magneto and Professor X. I mean, we know what they look like when they're older, and they don't necessarily look like it, and they didn't try to do anything to them.
Yeah, totally.
To make them look like it, but you just embrace it. Yeah. And they're great, and they're both great actors. So, and it was really good to see them. That was really kind of, I think, Michael Fassbender's breakout role. I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff recently. He's become a pretty big name, but I think that was one of the first ones he ended where people, the mainstream audience, was kind of going, "Oh shit, who's that guy?"
Yeah.
So I really liked him. He's really done a lot of good stuff recently. He had a really good small role in Haywire, which was a okay film, but he had a nice little role in that.
Yeah.
So you were impressed, Rose, with anything this year or summer or anything like that? Like, what about Avengers?
I didn't see Avengers.
You're one of the like, two people who haven't seen that movie.
You know, I know it's blasphemy, but I'm not super into, like, I mean, some comic book movies I think they do right, but for some reason I just don't feel like comic book movies always transfer well into film. I think they can be kind of cheesy, and I don't know. When they do transfer well into film, I think it's great, but yeah, I never really got into like the Avengers series, and it's probably wonderful and I should see it. I don't know why, but I kept thinking of, gosh, what was the Fantastic Four?
Oh.
And how much I hate it.
That's not a good example.
And I'm like, God, I really hope that it's not like that. No. You know, like, that movie was so bad.
Well, it's funny because the it's really hard to compare those two, especially even though they are both Marvel, because this whole Marvel Avengers series has come about because Marvel became their own studio. They had been licensing out their movies, and some of them are still licensed out to other studios. And then, I think it was like 2006 or so, they finally made their own studio, and that's when they started, you know, Iron Man and all those movies. So they, it's really themselves making these movies now, which is great, because you get all the right people involved, you don't have to worry about the studio as much saying, hey, let's do it this way. It's like, no, these people know how to make it authentic and real.
Yeah, Marvel's gonna do, obviously, a better job making a movie than...
Like, Fox was that one. Fox was Fantastic Four, and they still own the rights to Fantastic Four, unfortunately. But and that's been a big thing for them now that, I mean, Disney owns Marvel now, but still, it's not really an issue. You know, I've always said Disney knows how to leave something alone if it's making money. And that's what they're doing, obviously. So I think that series has been great. I mean, I really loved all the movies. I thought were really good, and I think the sequels that they're making now are going to be really good. The Avengers was probably the best superhero movie I've ever seen. I almost don't count The Dark Knight as a superhero movie because it's such like a realistic kind of just like an action crime movie. But it would definitely be those two. And they're on the different ends of the spectrum because The Dark Knight is so gritty and real and dark. Avengers is much more kind of fun and bigger. You can't make that gritty and dark. It's such a much bigger, grandiose,
bright, and
but it's very superhero. It's like when you think superhero film, you think Avengers. You kind of have to if you've seen it. And so they're on the different ends of the spectrum, but on both examples of how you can do a really good superhero movie, but in very two different ways.
I have a question for you, Dan.
Yes.
What do you think about the new Superman movie that's coming out?
You need to ask me that since that's my favorite superhero.
Yeah, I need to ask you that because I know your relationship with Superman. So.
Keep that on the down low.
You guys have something special going on.
I'm excited for it. I mean, I love Superman, so I'm willing to see him in anything. So that's why I don't knock too much on Superman Returns. I definitely was not what I wanted from Superman. Even though it had some good aspects to it and everything, and I thought that Brandon Routh did a very good Christopher Reeve impression, but I like the idea of them really. I'm glad they're starting over. I think it was weird for them to do almost like a sequel movie, like 20 years after the last Superman movie came out. And so I'm glad that now they're finally going, okay, we need to reboot this whole thing. And Zack Snyder is an awesome director. I love all of his work. You know, The Watchmen is a great example of him doing superhero movies. You know, Dawn of the Dead is a way of shows a really good sense of him to how he can turn something that's kind of out there and make it a little more real. So he's a really great director. And I know everyone kind of is worried because of Sucker Punch, which was not that impressive. Visually, it was nice, but it didn't have a good story because he wrote that and directed it. But he's not writing Superman, so I'm okay. So I think that he'll bring a really good visual style to it. The teaser stuff that we saw at Comic-Con was more than what people have seen so far, and it looked really good so far. The story potentially looks really good. Obviously, they're keeping a lot of it under wraps, but you know, they're really kind of being authentic to the story. They've done amazing casting. I mean, if you guys know any of the casting, I mean, having Kevin Costner and Diane Lane as Pa and Ma Kent
is wow.
It's awesome. What? Yeah, I mean, and like Kevin Costner is like the perfect example of Pa Kent. And then they have
totally.
And then they have Russell Crowe playing Jor-El, his biological father.
Nice.
So it's an amazing cast. They have Lawrence Fishburne doing Perry White. So first time they've had a black man play that character of the editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet.
Oh, wow.
And then they have Amy Adams doing Lois Lane. So really awesome cast surrounding Henry Cavill, who's a very solid actor from the little bit of stuff that he's done so far. He actually was up for Superman the last time when they did Superman Returns. He was I don't know if you guys remember that Superman Returns, the process was very long in getting that made, and at one point McGee was going to direct it, which would have been probably even worse. But he and at that point actually Henry Cavill was his choice. But one of the big things was that they wanted to film in Australia, and because it's really cheap. And he's afraid of flying. He can't fly. And so he actually had to quit.
So the guy who was going to play Superman in real life is afraid of flying.
No, the director.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Mick G was afraid of flying. And so he was trying to convince them to keep it in America. And they really wanted to do it in Australia because it's a lot cheaper. And so he ended up backing out of it. And so then they went a whole new direction and got Bryan Singer and then, you know, all the rest. So it's funny because Henry Cavill was actually basically already had the role for Superman the last time around. So the fact that he got it again. He actually was up for Batman, too. When they were doing Batman Begins, he was in the running, but then they ended up choosing Christian Bale. So he's been
running. Wow.
So he's been on the block for a lot of things. Actually, he was also up for James Bond before they had Daniel Craig. I mean, the guy's gotten so many close calls.
Wow.
He's gotten so many close calls.